What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. Another Thursday, we've got a news roundup for you. We're going to be chatting all kinds of stuff. Obviously, the banking system has been shaken a little bit this past week. It started happening just shortly after myself and Nico spoke last week. So happy to have him back this week. There's been a lot going on. So we're going to be talking about what's been going on with the banks, but also a little something called Operation Choke Point, which we've alluded to before on the show. So you'll be filled in on that. Now, obviously, this is live. Anything can happen. So I defer to my friend Bill here.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
If you have not already, please do like, subscribe, share, all those things. Super important, getting this content in front of more eyeballs. I am Ben with the BTC Sessions. This is your daily session.
Huddle the Bitcoin.
Before we dive in, let's take a look at where we are in the market right now. This is timechaincalendar.com. We're sitting at $24,973 US dollars per coin. A single US dollar will pick you up 4,004 sats. In terms of Bitcoin that has already been mined, 92%, we hit that threshold. 92% of all Bitcoin have been mined, which is 19.32 million of them. And in terms of fees, we're seeing a little bit of pressure in the mempool right now. By a little bit, I mean a fair amount. 34 sats per byte next block, even if you're willing to wait a bit, 24 sats per byte. And the mempool, I haven't seen it like this before. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention at certain points, but mempool on average can, you know, the average mempool on somebody's node can hold 300 megabytes worth of transactions sitting there waiting to confirm. There's 715 megabytes worth of transactions sitting in the queue. Anything with a transaction fee of under 3.21 sats per byte is being purged from the mempool. So keep that in mind as you're sending transactions. Use RBF. Do what you need to do. And if you're not in a rush, you know, maybe set that fee a little bit lower and bump it if you need. Anyways, outside of that, shout out to sponsors of the show, hodlhodl.com. If you're stacking sats and you have a few priorities in mind, like peer-to-peer trading, being able to get instant self-custody, and not having to KYC yourself, aka give up all your personal information in the process, then HODL is for you. You can sign up with nothing more than an email address. You can be buying Bitcoin non-KYC in minutes. And they also have a lending platform that never gets rehypothecated. So be sure to check them out. Again, hodlhodl.com. Link is down below. Now, when you purchase said sats, you're going to want to secure it in the best hardware on the market. And I love everything coming out of CoinKite. Of course, the Cold Card Mark IV, an absolute beast. And I've done a full tutorial. You can go through the basics in the first chunk, or if you want to dive deep into those advanced features that it boasts, be sure to check it out. But they've got tons of other great stuff. The Tap Signer is so simple to use. Sats Card, Open Dimes, Block Clocks, all kinds of great stuff. And coming down the pipe here, by the end of the year, the Cold Card Q1 looks absolutely badass. If you want to reserve one of those, do it now. Head to coinkite.com. Use code BTC Sessions for 5% off everything in the store. Now, if you're looking to secure your stack a little bit more beyond just a single SIG option, you can check out the Nunchuck Honey Badger Assisted Multi-Sig. So this is basically a multi-sig where they're going to hold a key just in case for you. They'll be your second signer when you need them. And it's super easy onboarding. It works with stuff like the Tap Signer and the Cold Card and a whole bunch of other options. And beyond that, inheritance planning is baked in. So you know that your next of kin will get your sats should anything happen to you. No worries. On top of that, you know, I love to say it, non-KYC. You don't have to give up all your personal information. This completely differentiates it from everything on the market. You can sign up with an email address. Eventually, you'll be able to log in with nothing more than a private key. So anyways, check them out. Nunchuck.io. Link is down below. And finally, We love Start9. Start9, your sovereign computing solution. Some big updates coming out today. I'll talk about those later towards the end of the show. But this is your sovereign computing solution. You can run your Bitcoin stack, Bitcoin Core, Lightning, things like mempool.space, things like Join Market, all that great stuff. You can host your own data, passwords, files, photos, all of that stuff. You can host Nostra relays, all kinds of great stuff coming out of Start9. Be sure to check them out. This thing is badass. This is what I'm using on the regular to host all my stuff. You can get the Embassy One pre-built from them on their website, or if you're looking for something super beefy to really host your life on, the Embassy Pro cannot go wrong. So head over to start9.com. Before we bring in Nico, let's just do a couple quick shout outs on the fountain.fm SAT streaming app. So those of you that are streaming or listening to this audio wise, you can stream SATs to the show. So of course, quick shout out to Joey says, where's the BTC conference happening? No, not the Bitcoin conference. I'm talking about the Bonico touching tips ceremony conference. We shall discuss. We'll find. Michael says, our messers have not heard the people's voice for generations, and it is much, much louder than they care to remember. Coach Carbon, Guy Swan, we are all Isaiah? I don't know. Isaiah. We are all Isaiah. Okay. Waruma says, Sats from Spain. Hey, I love Spain. I've been. I've thoroughly enjoyed it there. Dennis, stack to live, don't live to stack. Good episode from Hansa. Coach Carbon, be the glitch you wish to see in the Matrix. Love that quote. Camo Weasel said, Cypherpunk, Holy Grail. Rapasan, Nostra is the Hydra. And Second Breakfast said, I think most people won't use BTC because of tax implications. Not everyone is an accountant, nor should they be. When the burden is lifted, we will have a circular economy, stack to live. Entitled to your opinion, but I'm going to live. I'm living on a Bitcoin standard now. No turning back from me. Anyways, enough of my rambling. Let's bring in our buddy, Nico. It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, man. Always hyped.
It's been a busy week. It's been a lot has happened since the moment we went offline last week.
Yeah, yeah, a lot has happened. I start to have withdrawals, you know, because we are Bonico, right? Yes. So, but it's missing the be part. So like 5 days in, I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah, I got to add that BE. There we go. So
my hair starts to spike up a little bit in anticipation.
Yeah. It's coming. It's coming. I gotta redecorate the place a little bit here. Oh, there we go. Awesome. Okay. Well, dude, what should I be pulling up here first? Do we want a video? Should I be pulling up here?
Should we set the tone?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to set it with? Some J-POW or what?
Some J-POW.
Okay. All right. Jerome Powell, head of the Federal Reserve, J-POW. He's asked, is this where he's asked some questions? Okay, well, I won't spoil it too much then. We're just going to go ahead and let this puppy fly and people can listen to the convo. Jerome Powell, head of the Federal Reserve, being grilled.
For the general public, for those working families and people, why 2%? Why is getting it to 2% so important?
So that has become the globally agreed, essentially all major central banks target 2% inflation in one form or another.
How does that help my Nevada families? How does that help people in Nevada?
I'll tell you how it does. And it's obviously not, it's not obvious how that is, but 2% inflation, to have people believe that inflation is going to go back to 2% really anchors inflation there because, you know, the evidence is, The modern belief is that people's expectations about inflation actually have an effect on inflation. If you expect inflation to go up 5%, then it will. You know, if everyone kind of expects that, because that's what businesses and households will be expecting, and it'll kind of happen because they expect it. So having a 2% inflation goal, which we had for many years.
So what my takeaway from this is that inflation is like Tinkerbell's ability to fly. If you just believe it will do what it's supposed to do.
Dude, that is the head of the U.S. Central Bank. And she asked him a very direct question. Like, why is this 2% number? And bro, he had no idea. Like, no clue. Like, it's the consensus of the bank. What does that mean? Like, so just a bunch of central bankers got together and they're like, 2% theft, for some reason, that's okay with us. Like, I don't know, bro. It's just ridiculous.
I wonder if there's ever been, testing on like what people will tolerate the most, right? Like, what can they get away? Obviously, like, you know, this past couple of years, like with inflation running hot, it's front of mind. Everybody's, you know, talking about it. Everybody's interested in it and is wondering what the hell's going on. But I wonder if there's actually been some kind of backroom, like, okay, we can more or less get away with 2% pretty easily. People will let it slide and they'll just expect it. And it's enough of a slow burn that nobody really notices. Or if it was just literally like darts at a wall, 2%, that's the perfect number.
Bro, he had no answer. Like, that's the crazy part. He didn't answer the question. He was just like, it's a consensus of central banks. Like, you know, it's you have to try. Like, and I just, like, in my mind, like when he's saying that, I'm just like imagining Christine Lagarde, like Opti's ex-girlfriend, like just smiling, like, oh, Chrissy. 2%.
She loves when he toes the line.
Anyways, dude, so this was the big splash. This was the big splash this week. And basically and we've been covering this on Simply Sessions for quite a while now, Ben, right? The Biden administration has been using, sorry, before I get to that, but there's been a secret war basically on trying to isolate the industry from the legacy financial system. And Nick Carter wrote this great piece, which we've referenced many, many times on the show, but I'd love to read just the first paragraph so that it would give context to everybody. And just keep in mind, guys, when this was written. So this was written February 8th, or it was published, better said. So he goes on to say, what began as a trickle is now a flood. The U.S. government is using the banking sector to organize a sophisticated, widespread crackdown against the crypto industry. And the administration's efforts are no secret. They're expressed plainly in memos, regulatory guidance, and blog posts. However, the breadth of this plan, spanning virtually every financial regulator, as well as its highly coordinated nature, has even the most steely-eyed crypto veterans nervous that crypto businesses might end up completely unbanked, stablecoins may be stranded and unable to manage flows in and out of crypto, and exchanges might be shut off from the banking system entirely. Let's dig in, right? So he wrote that February 8th. And then this is Warren Togami. Warren Togami is the vice president of solutions at Blockstream. He goes on to say, Operation Chokepoint 2.0. Today, I heard this from the management of a small U.S. bank. Today, basically, every bank regulator is calling every bank and asking for the liquidity report, asking whether they plan to apply for the new Fed program, and asking whether they have any exposure to crypto. They're definitely trying to ensure that smaller banks don't touch this area. Now, this... like in the beginning of the week, I was suspicious, right? I was suspicious. I was like, okay, what's going on here? But as you dig deeper, this is an article from Reuters. It goes on to say U.S. regulators eyes Friday bids for Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, right? And if you scroll down to the bottom of this, it talks about the conditions as to like what conditions the government would be okay with the sale of these banks. Now, what's really interesting, and this matches what Warren Togami was saying, is the two sources added any buyer of Signature must agree to give up all the crypto businesses at the bank. But interesting, but a government spokesperson, an FDIC spokesman, told Reuters after publication that the agency would not require a disinvestment in crypto activities as part of any sale. So suspicious, right? So you have two like corroborating things, right? You know, the sources told this, but the government were like, no, we're not doing that. And then this was the nail in the coffin. This is when I was like, okay, duh, like it's confirmed now. It's not just, you know, crazy Bitcoiners on the internet saying there's a conspiracy. So it goes on to say, Tom Emmer, today I sent a letter to the FDIC chairman. Did you remember who said that? Who was the spokesman? An FDIC spokesman, right? So today I sent a letter to the FDIC chairman, Grunberg, regarding reports that the FDIC is weaponizing recent instability in the banking sector to purge legal crypto activity from the U.S. And Ben, if you could be so kind, if you could play the clip of him on Fox Business talking about it to give more context.
Let's take a listen.
More importantly, Neil, why is our government going after the crypto business? Signature, they initially announced that the issue was they were banking crypto and making loans. They weren't. They were just banking crypto, and even the New York Financial Services Department, the head of that, has acknowledged crypto had nothing to do with Signature. Barney Frank, the former chair of the House Financial Services Committee, has said it appears that this is an attack on crypto. In fact, two sources have told Reuters that anybody who buys Signature has to agree they will not bank crypto. So it's really interesting, Neil, more questions to be answered. If you look at the Fed, which just announced that this summer it's going to release or going to kick off its FedNow program, which is a payment system that would settle payments within seconds. It's interesting, is our government competing with the private sector right now? And are these banks that are banking crypto actually the target of their angst?
That's a fascinating, you know, subset of the story. It might be the story. Interesting.
Very, very, very interesting. And then here's the cherry on top. This is like the smoking gun, right? The same week that all this happened, the Federal Reserve announces July launch for the FedNow service. And what is the FedNow service? The Federal Reserve announced that the FedNow service will start operating in July and provide details and preparations for launch. The first week of April, the Federal Reserve will begin the formal certification of participants for launch of the service. Early adopters will complete a customer testing and certification program informed by feedback from the FedNow pilot program to prepare for sending live transactions through the system. The same week that they seize Signature is also the same week that the Fed is formally launching what I believe is the first iteration of their central bank digital currency. Isn't that interesting? And again, it would be a conspiracy theory, but it's not just a bunch of crazy Bitcoiners saying on the internet. You have a congressman saying it as well. Lots of coincidence, Bed. We've had a lot of coincidences these last couple months we've been doing this.
I mean, so the shitty thing about this is that, again, there's obviously, you and I know, most people watching this know, there's a major difference between Bitcoin and crypto, right? And unfortunately, the crypto bros are going to make Bitcoiners' lives much harder because they're such easy cannon fodder, right? They go and they do like basically what all of the fiat banks have been doing for ages, but to the extreme. And given that if they're dealing with Bitcoin too, that's a finite asset and you can't just go and fractional reserve that. And then there's no backstop to that, right? If you screw up, then, you know, you're going to go under. So you have things like FTX and Celsius and all that crap from last year. And then you have things kind of spilling over into regular banking. And it becomes easy to, for again, the Elizabeth Warrens of the world to point to, just blanket point to everything and include Bitcoin in there and say, this is the reason everything's for all of our troubles and we need to get rid of this and it's dangerous. And it's very easy right now for the Federal Reserve to start rolling out something like this and frame it as a necessary safety net for everyone. Oh, you got to use this because, without it, you are unsafe. Things could happen that are bad. This basically does exactly what Bitcoin does, but it's safe. And I think that's kind of the narrative we're going to be hearing over the next little bit. I mean, luckily, myself, you, and the people watching this will largely ignore that advice. But again, it's coming, and we know what to expect out of it, at least in terms of narrative, I'm sure.
100%. But isn't it weird? Like, we care about you. We're the government, you know, but at the same time, we're trying to like stifle out the competition, even though the competition is what's actually going to help people. Right. Like, it's so interesting to me how, and this is something that I've said many times, Ben, isn't it fascinating how Bitcoin exposes incentives? Yes. Right. And it doesn't matter who you are, like a company, a government, whatever. It's like, it just shows, exposes your incentives. Like, what are you actually about? you know, and no one could hide from it. And it's glorious to see.
Yeah. Well, it's Bitcoin is just because you can't bullshit for very long with it. It points out the economic reality of things much quicker than it would if it were, again, a fiat currency where the people in charge could paper over the mistakes and kick that can down the road. So again, they point to, you know, the Federal Reserve and central banks and quantitative easing and all of the different names we're going to get for quantitative easing and say, well, this is how we keep things safe for everybody. But really, no, you're taking the pain, you're drawing it out longer and making the ultimate pain at the end even worse.
Yes, 100 million percent. Anyways, so that's an update on the US, what's going on in America, but this is also an international phenomenon. Coincidentally, look at the date, Ben, same week, IMF had warned that G20 widespread crypto use would impact banks, right? Mind you, this comes, you know, very recently after, you know, the seizure of Signature. Anyways, the International Monetary Fund has warned the group of G20 nations, the widespread proliferation of crypto assets could lead to bank losing deposits and curtailing lending, right? Has nothing to do with fractional reserve banking. Mind you, it's not fractional anymore. The US, since like literally a couple years ago, is zero reserve banking. The IMF report on macro financial implications of crypto assets given to the G20 in February during a meeting in India was made public on Monday, days after the collapse of crypto-friendly banks Signature Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, and Silvergate Bank. India holds the G20 presidency this year. Quote, a widespread proliferation of crypto assets comes with substantial risks to the effectiveness of monetary policy. I think, Ben, what do you think about that statement right there? I think it says everything.
Well, the effectiveness of monetary policy. I mean, if I'm on a different monetary standard, then your monetary policy doesn't largely affect me. I mean, it does in a way, because when the money printers go burr, then yes, finite assets benefit from that. and people flee to other things, but that's denominated in dollars. Like at the end of the day, my percentage of the purchasing power in the money that I choose to use remains the same. But yes, they're correct. If somebody's not using your system, your policies are ineffective.
Yes, 100%, 100%. It's just the wordsmithing is hilarious. So, and this has led to, so of course we know what's happening in the US, but also in the UK, NatWest limits customers, crypto transfers from Tuesday, customer transfers to cryptocurrency exchanges will be limited £5,000 per 30-day period with no more than £1,000 per day. It's your money, you earned it, but hey, we get to decide how you spend it. And also, remember, Ben, we covered this when it came out and we said, hey, we're going to be paying attention to this to see if it develops. We said, we covered this, right? Binance will suspend US dollar transfer. We said, okay, maybe it's a coincidence. Binance halts deposits and withdrawals for customers in the UK, right? So, and then again, like in itself, you would say, okay, you know, Nico, like, is it a coincidence? But dude, IMF, banks in the UK. Yeah, United States Federal Reserve, CBDC launch, the seizure of Signature with the conditions that if we do sell Signature, you guys have to de-incentivize, like you guys have to drop your crypto business. Bro, at what point do you say, okay, I get it now, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, the beautiful thing here is we've seen what it looks like when places ban Bitcoin. And so for every little bit of tightening, for every little bit of making it that much more of a pain in the ass to get your hands on it, if something is difficult to get a hold of, it's going to command a premium. And we see perfect examples, Nigeria right now, it's banned. They've got their CBDC they want everybody to use. And the premiums on Bitcoin in Nigeria have been at times, what, like 50, 60%, something like that. It's been insane.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know that they would fully just I have an inkling that they're going to severely limit on ramps, and then they're going to try and say, oh, you can get it through the big banks because, you know, they're the most regulated. They have the most hoops to jump through, and nobody has the capital to pay the, you know, pay the piper as much as they do. And then we've also got control over kind of what they can do. So I think we may be stepping into a paradigm where it's like, okay, you can buy Bitcoin if JP Morgan holds it for you. Is that the road that we might be going down? I don't know, but
that's what they want. It's like, yeah, they can control it that way.
Well, yeah, because if it's all in custody of somebody else, then you can rehypothecate the hell out of it and keep that price down. But everybody watching this, don't do that. Go buy some non-KYC coin. Go at least, at the very least, what I'll say is, if you're using some sort of KYC on-ramp and it's working for you just fine, fantastic. But you need to learn how to obtain Bitcoin outside of those rails. You need to learn about alternatives. I mentioned HODL off the top of the show, but there's also other things like BISC and RoboSats, or just peer-to-peer at your meetups. Find other ways to obtain your Bitcoin. Look for I've got tons of tutorials up on that type of thing, and just at least acquire that skill. So if you need it, you got it.
Yeah. 100%. We've said this many times, bro, that, you know, things might get darker before they get brighter again. Mm-hmm. Anyways, moving on to more optimistic news. The mining development kit unlocking innovation in Bitcoin mining. This is a post from Jack Dorsey's company. A little while back, Jack announced that Jack Dorsey, that's who they're referring to, announced that we were considering launching a Bitcoin mining system based on custom silicon and open source, and our intention is to build it in open collaboration with the community. The response was overwhelmingly positive, with everyone from home hobbyists to developers, startups, and large mining operators expressing encouragement and interest in seeing us launch such a system. As a result, we announced our decision to move forward with the project. Since then, we have been heads down building a team to explore our mining hardware strategy and have kicked off the long process of developing our own Bitcoin mining semiconductor chips. Now, this is the hardest part, right? Because, unfortunately, the reality is that the Chinese have a ridiculous advantage here, right? The vast majority of you know, ASIC manufacturing happens from Chinese companies, right? I know a lot of them have migrated since the China ban, but, you know, could you imagine that, like, the country with the latest tech in mining happens to be a country that's extremely hostile towards Bitcoin? These facilities have moved overseas. Some moved to Thailand, right? So they've been trying to move away the manufacturing of it, but the reality is that a lot still gets made in China, mm-hmm. right? So, and this is a problem. And I believe that this is why Jack Dorsey got into it. Also Blockstream, specifically Adam Back, he acquired this company called Spadoodles. I completely butchered that name, right? But yeah, so like, I do think that this is a, you know, a potential attack vector, and I'm really happy that there's something being done for it, or done about it.
Yeah. The more it should be a competitive market, right? The more people coming in and creating these ASIC chips, the better. The you'll have more options, you'll have more innovation. You know, when it was basically only Bitmain, or like really only Bitmain as like the place where people got their stuff. Obviously, they're still huge, but like, having more options can only lead to better things. And I'm glad he's doing this. I'm glad that Blockstream is diving down this road. And I hope to see more. I would really like to see more come out of this. Well, I mean, you do mining, so you must be relatively happy about this development.
I mean, I'll put it to you this way. Let's see how the performance of their miner compares to Bitmain. Or Inno Silicon. Like, let's see. Because at the end of the day, I applaud Dorsey's effort. But like, at the end of the day, you want the most efficient miner, period. Like, you don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, okay, that's cool. Love Jack, what he's been doing. But like, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business. Like, you still want to make money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
So anyways, I mean, it's bullish. Obviously, I commend the effort. I think it's worthwhile. Another news, Gensler suggests proof of stake stake tokens are securities. Here's the quick take. Securities and Exchange Commission Chair Gary Gensler suggested Wednesday that tokens using staking protocols can be considered securities under U.S. law. Gensler suggested that the return token holders see from staking indicate that those tokens are securities and would need to be registered as such under U.S. law. And this is interesting because it's following up his comments in New York Magazine, where he went on to say everything other than Bitcoin is a security. And it's interesting to see how aggressive he is. Is he doing this because of his... Dude, he fucked up. Like with the FTX, like he fucked up bad. Like, is this trying to save his ass? I don't know.
Yeah. I very much wonder if he's going to go so far as to officially label Ethereum a security. I mean, he would be in terms of like the framework that they set out of like, hey, this is what a security is. I mean, when you look at it through that lens, it definitely applies. But I wonder if he's going to take that shot. And I'm not entirely convinced yet, but I mean, basically everything else for sure is going to be, it's going to have to register at some point. I'm just waiting for that shoe to drop. I'm waiting to see what that moment looks like, because right now, I feel like people look at this stuff and they're like, oh, and they'll kind of panic about it, but they just kind of have ignored it so far. And when that shit actually hits the fan, I'm going to be thoroughly entertained by the panic, as much as I think people should be able to just like make their own mistakes. It seems pretty clear, like the writing is on the wall here. What's going to happen?
Yeah. 100%. Let's see. Oh man, this is spicing up. It makes our job easy though. As content creators, we got stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
What happens when Bitcoin wins, dude? Like, what do we do?
I don't know. I mean, we'll just sit around talking about the money that people already uses. Everybody already uses. Nobody will watch.
So when you were talking, dude, I was picturing him pointing and it's like, hey, you take self-custody?
Yeah. That guy. Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking at you.
what are the orders that they send out, or when they basically send out, not a summons or whatever, but they like send out the notices of like, oh, hey, you're fucked. You're not abiding by SEC rules or whatever. Anyways, he's going down the line. You get a notice and you get a notice and you get a notice.
He's pointing at Vitalik right now.
Yeah.
Here, security.
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right. Okay. So moving on, also enormous news. Fidelity. Fidelity is a part of branch of Fidelity. So Fidelity has trillions of dollars under management. And I think the most bullish part of that about this is that this news came out right while this was happening, right? So Fidelity was basically saying, like while the basically, if you believe, you know, what Tom Emmer is saying, right, where the federal government is trying to isolate the industry, and then Fidelity is like, I don't care. Fidelity Crypto quietly went live, giving millions of retail customers to access to Bitcoin and shitcoin Ethereum. Fidelity Digital Assets quietly opened access to Fidelity Crypto for the masses recently. Millions of users can now trade Bitcoin and Ether commission-free on the platform. The app was previously restricted to a waitlist with users given access on a rolling basis. Fidelity Crypto is open to new and existing customers. First-time customers must create a Fidelity brokerage account during the setup process. Fidelity, which 37.1 million total retail accounts, has acted sooner than most of its peers in the U.S., in offering crypto to retail clients. The full launch happened over the past few weeks, according to sources with knowledge of the matter. And then remember, I think this is a bunch of signal because Elizabeth Warren, who's the anti-Bitcoin senator, any opportunity she can, she jumps on attacking Bitcoin. She attacked Fidelity for Fidelity's plans to allow Bitcoin investments in 401ks. So you know that she's hell-bent on stopping Bitcoin adoption. She's anti-Bitcoin. So she sees the writing on the wall. If someone, a big player like Fidelity, gets in the back of this, you know, you could see a lot of people. And this is a lot of people. This is 37 million people now have access to buying, you know, it is paper Bitcoin. Right? They're not specifying about the, you know, the ability to take self-custody if you buy on the Fidelity platform. But still, man, this is, I think it's incredibly bullish, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, the part that I like the most is, despite the fact that Elizabeth Warren has been shrieking directly to Fidelity about them wanting to do this, they didn't care. They just did it. I think they kind of see the writing on the wall of, like, you know, with what's happening, people are going to see this as an avenue to preserve their purchasing power over long periods of time. And so obviously as a financial institution, they're going to want to provide that thing because they can make money off of that. So everybody's incentivized to want to deal with this kind of stuff. And this, the other thing here in that headline that also throws back to Gensler, I have a hard time believing that Fidelity would offer Ether if they thought the hammer was going to come down on it. So I'm wondering if that also kind of shows what we might see in the future, but we'll see.
Yeah. What, 1 million percent. Anyways, last story for today, Ben. Oh no. A bit of a mix up. Okay. So I'll include it with this as a kind of a double back. I apologize for that. So we were talking about, you know, Gensler suggests proof of stake tokens are security. So we riffed on that already, but I wanted to focus on this, right? So this is MEV Watch. And since, you know, Ethereum migrated to proof of stake, who are the biggest stakers? Exchanges, yeah. Even one that's defunct, right? So you see the biggest ones like Binance, Bitfinex, OKX, Kraken, Celsius, and you could see what percentage of the transactions they're censoring. And specifically, they're censoring for the Office of Foreign Asset Control, which is part of the U.S. Treasury. Dude, man, what a, excuse my language, a clusterfuck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, this would happen. Like, obviously, when you design a system that is such that the rich get richer, and the richest are the ones that also have control over how the system works, of course, centralization of power will happen over time. So, no surprise there whatsoever.
Yeah, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Well, dude, thank you for coming and filling us all in. I'm getting more and more excited. It's happening, man. It's happening. We're 2 months out from Miami. That's gonna be a party. What are you doing there? Are you gonna hit a few things? Like, are you going to a couple of parties, or what are you doing?
What am I doing in Miami? So
the club party.
Yeah, I mean, I have to go. I have to go. Part of my job. But yeah, so I'm going to the pleb party. Probably be hanging out with at Swan events for sure.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be crashing the BTC sessions. Whatever events you plan to do, I'm gonna bring Sophie specifically. Tell her it's a party. She's like, again? What do you mean?
I did this already. Yeah, but you don't remember it, so do it again.
And then I'm going to play the video, the meme video of you, bro. Like, if you had 24 hours with me, what are you going to do? Like that one. So, yeah, man. Dude, I'm just excited to kick it with you, bro. Get some beers, hang out, talk, dye my hair, all that good stuff.
It's going to be a good time. I'm excited. I'm excited that my wife is coming down. And yeah, I'm spending a week down there. I'm getting down on the 15th. And I'll be there through to the, like, Monday to Monday, basically. So, yeah.
What do you think about doing a live show?
Let's do it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Why not?
some Simply sessions, simply BTC sessions, Simply Bitcoin cross-pollination.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's find a time and do it. We can do it. Are you setting up there? Like, are you going to be doing like a live show, like on the floor, or what are you doing?
So I live in Miami. I live 10 minutes away from the conference.
Okay.
So, I'm going to be like you. I'm going to be on the desk, the analyst desk.
Oh yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. It's going to be a good time. And yeah, we'll, very, very excited for the touching of the tips. It should be good. I feel like we need to start adding the context, because the people that started talking about this are probably, there's like 80 or so people right now that are like, I don't follow. Anyways, Nico's dying his hair and we're going to touch the tips.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. Anyways, Ben, it was a lot of fun. This was your Simply Sessions.
Later, man. Awesome. All right, everybody. Few things before we wrap up here. I will share my screen. I wanted to bring a couple things to your attention, some exciting things that I thought were worth sharing this week. First up, those of you on Noster, there's a basically a spec for a DIY signing device by LN Bits. So this little thing, I think it's like $10 worth of hardware or something like that. Either way, it's really, really cheap. But effectively, if you're on Noster, you'll be familiar with the idea that you have a public key and a private key. And whenever you're posting something, effectively, you're signing that with your private key to prove that it is indeed this account putting up the information. Well, when you have that key as a hotkey on a device, then there's always the potential that somebody gets into your device or somebody accesses your device in some way and is able to pull that private key and then assume your digital identity, at least on Noster. And so this device would effectively be like a YubiKey style thing for Noster. All right. So it would go up, it would house your private key for Noster, and then approval of posts would go through it. Obviously, plenty of work to be done here, but interesting to see that things like this are already happening. Keep on going. Also, update to Spectre Desktop, refined UI, Electrum server support, and Tor connectivity. So I just downloaded this, updated it, and everything. Excited to dive in. I've done a video on Spectre before, and I still have a Spectre DIY device here that I need to do a video on as well. So maybe that's maybe this is my signal that it's time to do that. What else here? We got some big announcements in terms of updates from Start 9 Labs. Upgrade to Embassy OS version 0.3.4, security patches, bug fixes, faster Tor, which is nice. EFI build support, community registry, SSL support for IP access, and new system metrics. I just upgraded earlier. And with that upgrade, they also dropped Iris. So if you're unfamiliar with Iris, it is a Noster client, and you can run it natively on your Start9 Embassy. Speaking of Start9, Gary Leland, thanks for the shout out. He just got his Embassy, and he tweeted out that, hey, same shirt too, by the way, in the video there. Anyways, he was watching my tutorial and setting up his Start9. So Gary, hope it went well. I got Iris up and running here on my Embassy now. And so here's my, there we go. Yeah. So anyways, yeah, basically you can run this natively on your own hardware and then access it remotely if you see fit as well. Other than that, I also wanted to draw attention to this. Julian, if you're unfamiliar with him, AKA on Twitter, at Kinetic Finance, he did one of the most professional, awesome videos regarding his trip to Guatemala to go to Bitcoin Lake. And so I had to show the trailer on here. It's about a 10-minute video. The trailer is just a minute or so, but please go watch this thing. Here's a little preview. Enjoy.
2 years ago, El Salvador became the first country to declare Bitcoin as an official currency. Since then, people are split between whether their Bitcoin law was a wild success or a total flop. And that's not even mentioning all the other drama since then.
Your corporate accounts will be frozen.
Who owes who what?
The now bankrupt FTX.
I'm deeply sorry about what happened.
But a few hundred miles away in the neighboring country of Guatemala, the Bitcoin movement continues to spread. Not through a legal currency law, but by a purely grassroots initiative set in the bustling lakeside town of Panajachel. All in a country with a surprisingly different economy, heritage, and monetary history. So, what makes using Bitcoin here drastically different than El Salvador? Could Bitcoin empower the indigenous communities of Guatemala to achieve monetary sovereignty? And could this town be the new blueprint for how Bitcoin becomes accepted in dozens of countries, hundreds of towns, and millions of people across the world? Join me as I discover the story and the secrets behind Lago Bitcoin.
Seriously, it is absolutely badass. Look him up. He's on Twitter at Kinetic_Finance, but you can also find his YouTube channel under the same handle, Kinetic Finance. So go check it out. Other than that, of course, we were just talking about Miami. If you're going to head down to Miami, be sure to go ahead and grab tickets soon. Again, they go up at regular intervals in terms of price. So if you want to grab a ticket, b.tc/conference, and you can use code BTC Sessions and get yourself 10% off. If you're unsure if you're going to make it, but you're on the fence and you're worried about those price increases as they hit, I found that especially if it's earlier on, if you can get in before the next price hikes, then you can always go and resell your ticket before the event if you can't make it. Just hopping on Twitter and stuff like that, I found is a good outlet to offload any extra tickets you may have. But nonetheless, I do hope to see a bunch of you there. Very excited for it. As I was saying earlier, I'm going to be having my cold card workshop down in Miami. It's going to be a blast. If you are basically waiting or you have a cold card and you've been kind of waiting to learn about how to use it, or you're a little timid, or you need to get a cold card and you want to be basically an expert in that thing, if you're going to be in Miami on May 17th, that's the Wednesday before the conference kicks off, I'm going to be running my cold card workshop. It is 4 hours from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. We're going to start with the basics, get everybody set up so that they can use this thing, do air gap transactions, and then we're going to dive into some of the more detailed advanced features so that you really can get more bang for your buck out of your cold card. You can head over to my website, btcsessions.ca, and you can grab tickets there. Just head over on the right-hand side. There's a thing that says in-person workshops right next to my private one-on-ones if you need those as well. But either way, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in Miami for that and at the pleb party and all the other things that'll be going on. And finally, tomorrow, we got Why Are We Bullish? Going to be at, again, 6 p.m. Eastern time. We've got Annette from Keeper app, which is like an assisted multi-sig deal. We've got somebody coming on from Geyser Fund, and we've got Count BTC or Nolan. He was going to be on the show a few weeks back, and then I wasn't feeling well, unfortunately. And so he did a spaces with me though, which, and the guy was knocking everything out of the park. So I'm very excited to have him on as well. It's going to be a blast. Make sure you tune in tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Should be a lot of fun. Anyways, guys, of course, like, subscribe, share. All those things are super important. You can also hit up the previously mentioned sponsors down below. HODL, CoinKite, Nunchuck, Start9. They're all down here. And again, tickets for the conference. If you really liked what you saw, you can always hit me up with a Bitcoin tip at my Strike page. You don't need Strike to use it. You just go there. You type in any amount you want. Hit the tip button. You'll be greeted with a regular Lightning invoice, or if you tap to the right, a Bitcoin on-chain invoice for the same amount. With that, I am out. Have yourselves a wonderful day or evening, wherever you may be. See you guys next time for your daily session.
We have BTC Sessions. Bitcoin is FU money. You can't stop it. Get yourself some Bitcoin and hold it yourself. Peer-to-peer exchange. You know, people are going to organically come to it and gravitate towards it, especially in the world we're living in now. It's incredible. It's a great tool, and I can't wait to see it proliferate everywhere.
Oh.
Bitcoin.